Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who have supported me over at patreon.com/mtginquarantine. So a huge round of applause and thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. Today's episode of the podcast is going to be an absolute barrel full of laughs. We're going to talk about everyone's favorite thumbless goblin, Krark the Thumbless. But, again, it wouldn't be an MTG in Quarantine episode without me bringing amazing guests who know a whole lot about today's topic. So, without further ado, I'd like to bring two very, very special guests and welcome them to the show. The first one is Ken from Stacked EDH, also the guy who built Siskel and Ebert, which is also the very, very, very popular Krark Sakashima CDH list. So, welcome, Ken.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about my favorite meatball child.
No problem. Before we get started here, Ken, you have the Stacked EDH channel. You want to talk a little bit about that for people who haven't heard about that before?
Yeah, absolutely. So Stacked EDH is a commander-oriented YouTube channel. We make videos about commander, both casual and competitive. We've got video essays, deck techs, piloting and politicking advice, edited gameplay, skits, all kind of stuff. And I can be found on Instagram posting occasionally, and then on Twitter posting way too much, talking about what I'm working on with regards to Stacked, talking about Krark stuff, and talking in general about the format and how we think about it and how we can make it a better and more inclusive environment.
Definitely, definitely. Sounds good. And our other guest for today is someone I've been meaning to have on for quite some time, but it just was perfect for this episode. So I'd like to introduce to the show my buddy Scoop Phase. Welcome.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, MJ. Definitely appreciate it. I'm excited to talk about Ken's meatball as well.
All right. So, again, we're going to be talking about Krark the Thumbless for this episode. So if you're ready for a veritable Krark-ageddon, or Krark NATO, I guess that's what we were talking about before the show, something like that to make it sound, you know, super scary, super spicy. I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, for anyone who doesn't know what Krark the Thumbless is, I'm going to tell you right now, just so we have a good baseline here. Krark the Thumbless was a rare legendary creature, came out of Commander Legends last year, so 2021, and is a 2/2 goblin wizard costing 1 and a red, and reads, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, flip a coin. If you lose the flip, return that spell to its owner's hand. If you win the flip, copy that spell, and you may choose new targets for the copy. And Krark has partner, along with a very interesting flavor text, Double or Nothing. So, which makes sense, honestly, because Krark is easily one of the most popular, I would say, CDH commanders, especially over the last year, just because of the ability to be able to copy spells right on a body with, it only costs 2 mana to bring right out of the command zone, and the partner clause. So, yeah, again, since I did mention this a couple minutes ago, Ken, you do have the very popular Siskel and Ebert, Krark and Sakashima partner pairing on the CEDH decklist database. Do you kind of want to just talk us through what this deck really does and what it's looking to do, kind of to get us started on what all Krark can do?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be glad to talk about that. So when I first saw this goblin, I thought, that's pretty fun, right? I like flipping coins. I like gambling. I used to play poker a lot. So if I can gamble while playing Magic, what's not to love? And then they spoiled Sakashima. And Sakashima is just basically, hey, add blue to your deck, and then you get another one of the other commander. And so I thought, okay, wait a minute. So if I'm flipping 2 coins, that's better odds than flipping 1 coin, right? And then I started to think, well, I'm in red and blue. What's red and blue do well? Oh, red and blue can do clones. Okay, so wait a minute. What if I'm flipping 3 coins or 4 coins or 5 coins? What happens to those odds? Those odds of both copying the spell and returning it to your hand. And so I started to brew. And folks like Scoop joined in really, really quickly. We threw together a Discord, and we pretty quickly realized that when you can increase the odds of giving your instants and sorceries buyback zero, because that's essentially what Kark creates, right? He gives you a pretty good chance of getting buyback zero, and then pair it with extremely powerful spells, like stuff that's free, like Fierce Guardianship or Deflecting Swat or Snap, stuff that can net you mana, like Frantic Search, Jeskha's Will, and then storm payoffs, which don't care whether or not they go back to your hand because you still get the storm trigger, stuff like Mind's Desire, Temporal Fissure, Grape Shot, that suddenly you had a really good manual storm deck. It's non-deterministic, meaning you could fizzle, you could fail. It's not like you just assemble, you know, a bunch of one or two card combos and then boom, you have it. You really have to piece together a win and find it as you go and, you know, let the coin guide you. So this deck was brewed pretty quickly after Commander Legends was spoiled, and we made what we could with the card pool. And then in the last year, Wizards of the Coast is just like
last year. Oh,
oh
boy.
My God. It's just insane. They've given us like literally 10 cards. So 10 to 15% of our deck has been added in the last year because of all the new cards like Tavern Scoundrel and Harmonic Prodigy and Veyron, Voice of Duality and Strike Rich and blah, blah, blah. So the deck got a huge juice up, got a huge glow up, and since then has started performing super well in tournaments all across the world and is now, I think, one of the more popular competitive lists.
Definitely, definitely. I would say that since your Moxfield list doesn't even have a view count, you've effectively broken it.
Is that correct? Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I mean, I think I see 48,272 views, but, you know, it's a good number. It's a good number, but who's counting? I really want it to be the most popular list on Moxfield eventually. That's my goal. I don't think I'll ever overcome Pongo's list, but that's okay. That's not going to stop me from trying.
Sure, sure. I mean, honestly, Ken, it's really awesome being able to talk to you about this list because, again, a lot of people know that I'm trying to get into CDH here, and so I've definitely had this exact list or similar lists on my radar. So being able to talk to you and just have you on here to talk about this list is just a complete honor to just, you know, hear it from the man himself who put this deck together.
And that's really... very kind. That's very kind. I do want to emphasize, though, too, like, you know, anytime I get a chance to have conversations with this, and I'm glad that Scoop's here with me, because this deck is a communal effort. Like, it, you know, I started the Discord and I wrote the primer, and sure, I've spent a lot of time on those things. And I've propagandized relentlessly about this deck and how fun it is, but it is really truly a labor of love created by hundreds and hundreds of people all across the world. Just last year, we had a Kark summit, more or less, where we spent, got 4 hours talking about, yeah, you know, which decks are absolute or which cards are absolutely essential for the deck. And it was something like 20 people talking for 4 hours, and we came to agree on 93 cards. Oh, so wow. I think that really shows you, right, how precise and how kind of charitable we are with one another, this little thumbless cult that we've managed to start up and join. But yeah, so it's a really good community, and I'm just sort of the community's mouthpiece, not a leader, hopefully, just a mouthpiece.
Sure, sure. And I've definitely tried to make it pretty clear through my own journeys with trying to build and kind of crowdsource my own entry into the format, if you will. I can definitely vouch for listening to the community when you're trying to build a deck, especially if it's your first homebrew, is that, you know, there's a really good community out there, and especially for anyone out there listening to this right now who's interested in trying out CDH for the first time, but you don't know exactly where to start. I mean, you know, checking out primers like this on the deck database, on the CDH deck database, as well as just, you know, getting involved, talking to the community members, asking questions. Honestly, I just posted on Twitter that, hey, you know, I have this deck idea. I want people to take a look at it. I got a lot of good responses. I basically overhauled like half the deck and it still needs work. But, you know, it's a group effort. I took all that information and I'm just taking that, continually working at the deck, and that's really where you start with. So I can definitely understand how this particular list right here is like, it started with an idea, it needed some of those growing pains, right? For it's just like any other EDH CDH deck, it's gonna take some times, a lot of playtesting, but once you finally get to that point where you're comfortable with it, that's really where the deck can start shining.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, most definitely. And last year we had our first Kark off, right, Ken? It's almost our Kark off.
Oh my God, it is almost our anniversary.
The list was basically we played four of everyone's playing Clark Sakishima, and the lists. Oh my god, I don't even know where my old list is, but I would say, you know, no one knew what to do at that point, so we're all kind of like feeding off each other, you know, trying to get it to where it is now. But like you said, it's you're gonna get comfortable with the deck, you're gonna figure out the lines, and then you're gonna start pulling out some pieces that may not be suitable for your meta or something that you actually like playing. I always joke around with Ken talking about bribery. And I'm like, okay, I'm putting bribery in this deck. I don't care if somebody says it's not CDH or, you know, I'm going to get flamed in the comments or anything. I love bribery. Bribery is a great card. It steals Docksides. If you copy it, you can steal Thassa's Oracle and, you know, whatever, basically. So those kind of things, it's like, get comfortable with the deck, find the lines, and then you're never going to stop tuning the deck. You're going to look at it. I look at my Moxfield probably every day, just mentally looking at the cards. All right, you know what? This one's not too good in my meta. This one is. So let's just swap it out. Even without playing the deck, I'm more comfortable knowing that if I were to draw X, Y, and Z, this is good, this is bad, etc. But you'll never be truly finished with the commander deck.
That's especially exactly in
CDH.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I really am excited about getting into CDH is just as a personally just mostly doing casual brews. You know, I sometimes feel like, okay, this deck is kind of finished based on what the goal was. But yeah, with CDH, there's always something new coming out, always something exciting, some new interaction you never thought of before that could always go in this sort of shell. So yeah, now that we've kind of gone over that a little bit, I want to pick both of your brains a little bit regarding this particular list before we move on. And I'm just curious, like, what are some of, like, the, I guess, sleeper cards that you would think are in this list? And just kind of, or on the flip side of the coin, just any cards you're just really excited to talk about for, like, a minute or two in this particular list. It's like, hey, you know, I just want to talk about this, and I just love it in this deck for this reason.
On the flip side of the coin, I see what you did there.
I heard it. I know. I think with that, a lot of these are kind of like grouped together, like Strixhaven. Oh, thank you, Strixhaven, for Magecraft keyword.
My God. Oh, my God. What a gift. What a stupid gift.
Like Stormkiln Artist, we call it SKA, S-K-A for the initials, and Archmage Emeritus. I would group them together basically as, cast it or not, we're going to be doing what those cards say on them.
Yeah.
You know, if it bounces back or not, doesn't matter. Stormkiln Artist, I think, is, insane.
Yeah. And yeah. Scoop, could you read out what those cards do real quick so everyone at home knows what they do?
Yeah, no problem. So these are both from Strixhaven. Archmage Emeritus, it costs 2, a blue and a blue. It's a 2/2 human wizard. And in its text box, it says Magecraft. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, draw a card. Pretty simple, right? Not too innocuous. You play a spell, draw a card. With Quark, you copy the spell and you're casting a spell, so you're drawing 2 off it. It gets out of hand very quick.
Oh,
and
wow, yeah.
Stormkiln Artist is a dwarf shaman, costs 3 and a red. It gets +1/+0 for each artifact you control, and it also has Magecraft. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, create a treasure token.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And treasures, those turn out to be a little bit overpowered. And if you're casting 1 mana spells and you're getting a treasure, or you're casting 1 mana spell, copying it 3 times and getting 3 treasures, and you're casting a Gataxian Probe for 0 mana, you're net positive, you're making mana, you're drawing cards, you're adding the storm count. Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, what's not to love, right? I think, you know, those cards, they already seem powerful, right? Because they are rewarding you for doing something you were already doing.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Right? Casting instants of sorceries. Hey, you know, you play competitively. You're casting a lot of instants. You want to move at that tempo. All good. Sorceries, tutors, etc. And then the reason Magecraft is really, really silly is that or copy clause, because let's imagine you've got just as a hypothetical, right? You got a couple Quarks. Let's say you have 3, right? You got Quark, you got Sakishima and Phantasmal Image.
Yeah.
That's the Sakishima Quark or whatever. And you've got a Stormkiln Artist. Okay. And you just pass the turn and you've got a little bit of mana because, you know, maybe you want to counter a spell or something that's scary. Let's say you have a Flusterstorm in hand. Okay. Somebody casts some big, crazy game-winning spell. There's a counter war. Player A casts the counter spell. Player B defends their spell with a counter spell. Player C jumps in and casts a counter spell. Player D jump, you know, whatever. It goes on and on and on. And let's say the storm counts something like 6 or 7. All you have to do in this scenario is sneak in your little card with storm, sneak in that little fluster storm. And as soon as the storm trigger resolves, you're making 8 treasure. You're making 8 treasure with 1 mana. And then you're flipping 3 coins to see whether or not that fluster storm goes back to your hand. And the copies created by storm are already on the stack. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you lose all 3 flips, if you win all 3 flips, it doesn't matter. The storm thing has already happened. You're already countering the spells. You've already made the mana. Nobody runs stifle effects. So you're going to get it. You're going to get it no matter what. And, you know, when you got 3 cards, you got a 75% chance of getting both of what you want. You get to copy the thing and you get to put it back in hand. So the engine gets really silly out of hand. It forms a state in which you just have all the mana in the world. You're doing what you would regularly do in order to draw cards and find combos and try to win that way. And you're just generating resources for no reason, for no good reason.
Doing the things that you're already doing, trying to counter spells or playing a cantrip to go through your deck. Everything just gets out of hand way quick.
Yeah, absolutely. So those Magecraft cards really are extremely powerful and pretty annoying. I mean, you know, Stormkiln Artist it's an uncommon. I think it's $2. Archmage Emeritus is, I think, $4. So it's nothing crazy. And there are cards in this deck that are even cheaper that are terrifying for opponents. There's a card, Tavern Scoundrel. Tavern Scoundrel, right? This is, I think, if you can get a foil for 18 cents.
18 okay? cents, yep.
Yeah, it's a nickel. You can get a Tavern Scoundrel for a nickel. It's a common for Modern Horizons 2. And I was playing a game the other day. I had Krark. I cast Tavern Scoundrel. And one of my opponents literally was like, oh, my God. Oh, no. Oh, no. We have to kill that. We have to kill that immediately. And I just started laughing because I'm like, this is a 5-cent card. You know what I mean? This isn't Time yeah. Twister. This isn't Intuition. This is a 5-cent common from Modern Horizons 2. It's draft chaff in many instances. And it's a kill on sight spell in this deck. So the deck can really utilize pretty budget friendly cards, really. You don't have to spend a lot of money to make Krark and Sakushima real consistent, real powerful, real funny. You don't. You can, but you don't have to.
You want to read off Tavern Scoundrel, Ken?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good point. So Tavern Scoundrel is a 1/3 for 2, 1 and a red. It's a human rogue. It says whenever you win a coin flip, create 2 treasure tokens. And then the second ability is pay 1 generic mana and tap it and sacrifice another permanent to flip a coin. But really that first triggered ability is the thing, because Krark, once you flip in coins, so every time you win a flip, you make 2 treasures. And that you can imagine if you're casting free spells like Deflecting Swat or Gitaxian Probe, where all you have to do is pay 2 life in a 40 life format, it's real easy to start making a lot of treasures. And it turns out having a bunch of free lotus petals just, you know, fall into your lap is pretty good, pretty fun.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the tertiary about Mana Crypt, because you're still flipping a coin for the upkeep. So that's another, you know, if you have just Mana Crypt out and you win the flip, you're making 2 treasures. So it's
that's right.
Very synergistic.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a real, that's a nice thing about this deck. And I think it makes it stand out among some competitive decks and then even casual versions. You can build an extremely synergistic version of this deck where you don't get wrecked if like 1 or 2 cards get exiled out of your deck or you lose them to the graveyard and you can't get them back. You're not just like, oh no, the deck can win with a ham sandwich. We say this all the time. Once the engine's online, literally a cantrip will win the game and cause your opponents to scoop. And what other decks can you say that about? Just like 2 nights ago or last night, I was playing a stream and I had 4 Krarks and I just tutored Gitaxian Probe and everybody's like, I'm ready to scoop it up. Is that good? And I was like, yeah, that's fine by me. Like, I know where this is going. What other deck can you get your opponents to scoop by showing them a Gitaxian Probe? Like, this is silly.
Yeah, it's definitely a house out there for sure. And also, you were mentioning Mana Crypt. Krark's Thumb is also perfect in here because you get double the flips. Well,
exactly.
Tavern Scoundrel out there, you don't even need to actually win Krark. If you can win one of them, you get that you get the effect. And it just, it, yeah, this list is mind-bogglingly silly, and I love it. So,
yeah, and it's fun. In the same vein of Krark's Thumb, I think we can group, similar to the Magecraft cards, we've got Krark's Thumb, Harmonic Prodigy, and Varine, the Voice of Duality, which are all similar to where... let me read Harmonic Prodigy, and these are pretty similar effects, but basically making yourself flip two coins instead of one, so you can kind of make your own destiny. So Harmonic Prodigy, Human Wizard, one in a red. It's got prowess. And if an ability of a shaman or another wizard you control triggers, that ability triggers an additional time. So cast a spell. Harmonic Prodigy is out. Krark is out. You're flipping two coins, essentially a clone of Krark without the clause of being a legend.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Similarly, Varine, same thing. If casting or copying an instant or sorcery spell causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. This is a 2/2 Efreet Wizard for one, a blue and a red, which also synergizes well with Harmonic Prodigy, turns out. And then, like you said, Krark's Thumb, which you flip two coins instead of one, and you ignore one of the outcomes.
Yeah, it's all about manipulating your odds, right? So all these things, just they're just making you have a better and better chance of getting what you want. And in this case, for this deck, what you want is to both copy the spell and return it to your hand so you can keep doing it. So the way I like to pitch this deck to a lot of folks is, do you like casting instants and sorceries? And if somebody's like, yeah, I do. Well, how much do you like it? Because this deck will have you do it more than any other deck probably in the history of Magic. So that's it. Like, if you're Spellslinger at heart, if you're Is It Mage, right, you want to, like, do something that's risky, that's fun, that's explosive, that's unpredictable. You want to build a really kind of madcap engine out of a bunch of weird, janky parts and then watch that engine just take over. This is the deck for you.
Definitely, Absolutely. All right, so now that we've talked about this particular list, Siskel and Ebert, when you go down the database a little bit more, you start seeing Krark showing up on some other lists as well. And obviously this really speaks to how good Krark can be in a variety of situations. So we've talked about Krark-Kashima, as it's called, so the Krark and Sakashima pairing at length at this point. But again, when we're looking at like the Krark Discord that you guys have mentioned on there, and I am a member on there, I'm just not a really big Discord user, but I am on there. I am kind of checking out and seeing what's out there. What are some of the other interesting partner pairings that Krark has in the CDH meta right now that kind of take this copying in a little bit of a different direction, but can still be just as powerful as what we've already talked about?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing is there are a ton. People are really brewing all sorts of fun combos. You know, say what you will about the partner mechanic. Like, was it in general kind of a mistake? I don't know. I'm not, you know, that's above my pay grade. But this has really enabled people to take all sorts of different directions with this card. There are Krark Ikra decks, Krark Jeska decks, Krark Timna decks, Krark Silas decks, Krark Ishai decks. It goes on and on and on and on. People are Krark Thrasios, of course. People are really interested in brewing around this little thumbless idiot. And I think that what it shows you is that people do want actually to inject a little less, I'd say, consistency into their games. They want that chance at the explosive spell. They want that chance at the surprise, right? People, I think, want a little bit more surprise in their experiences, even at the highest end of the format where people are really trying to win super consistently and efficiently and playing with all the most powerful cards, whatever. People want a little bit more fun, a little bit more surprise, a little bit more kind of delight in their Magic experiences. And I think that all of that brewing shows you that. So yeah, I mean, you know, pick a partner and somebody has probably already at least either designed and played a list pretty extensively with Krark, or they've at least thought about it and, you know, thought, hey, what could this look like? Like, you know, if we use Krark's ability, what can we do with it? We could make tokens, you know, we could have, as you know, we could have a Boros tokens deck. We could have, you know, like a rule of law deck that really tries to prevent people from doing stuff and then, you know, does another thing. We could have a wheels deck. We, you know, there are all sorts of directions you could go with it.
Sure. And it's interesting that you bring up the Boros Tokens deck, because I will be bringing that up later in the episode. So if you're out there listening, definitely stay tuned for my own more casual take on Kirk that's still silly and falls under my own brewing style here. But yeah, again, Ken, you did mention a lot of other very popular, very powerful commanders. And I'm just curious, from your opinion, what are some of those other decks necessarily looking to do that's a little bit different from Siskel and Ebert? So basically, in other words, try to sell the listeners out there on what some of the other partner pairings that are really doing well with Kirk are doing, just in case people out there are interested in saying, well, I don't necessarily want to play the Clones deck. Maybe I want to try this instead.
Yeah, absolutely. So I maintain a modular CDH or competitive Kirk list. I call it the Kirk box. And it's just a modular deck that either is Kirk Sakashima, Kirk Thrasios, or Kirk Timna. I wanted to cover all the colors, and I thought that those three commanders were all fun, and I've enjoyed playing with them in the past, and I like those color pairings. So Kirk Timna is a list that can utilize disruptive spells that you don't normally see in Commander, like Thoughtseize or Mind Swords, cards that, you know, attack people's hands. And I know some players don't enjoy having their, you know, cards discarded, and that's fine. Talk to your table and make sure everybody's fine with it. But that deck can really utilize hand disruption in a way that most decks, even in the CDH realm, don't really use. It can also turn wheels, right? Those incredibly powerful three mana spells where boom, you discard and you refill your hand. When you copy those a few times, suddenly things start to get pretty crazy. And particularly if, you know, between each copy of, let's say, a Wheel of Fortune, you're able to throw in a couple instants, right, to continue to affect the game state. And then rituals
in between all that.
Yeah, imagine, you resolve a Wheel of Fortune, you draw a Dark Ritual, you cast a Dark Ritual, it copies, so now you have six mana, and then you draw a fresh seven, and let's say in that fresh seven, there's a Silence, so you cast the Silence, and now your opponents are locked out, and blah, 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 it just goes on and on.
Oh, definitely.
And Kirk Timna can also leverage a lot of the white kind of hate bear creatures and like value creatures like Opposition Agent, Dranith Magistrate, Aven Mind Sensor, etc. So it's got some kind of more creature support, and it plays, I'd say, kind of a stackier, more disruptive, grindy game because you can always draw cards with Timna. Mm-hmm. Kirk Thrasios is I mean, you know, there's the phrase, you know, like Simic value, like Kirk Thrasios is basically Kirk Sakshima, but just Simic value. So you're doing all the Kirk things, but you're also ramping a ton of lands into play. You've got a Gaia's Cradle. You have like really compact creature combos because you're in great colors for creature combos. You've got creature tutors that you can really utilize. And then, you know, sometimes with Kirk Sakashima, you'll generate like a bajillion mana. You'll have like 30 red mana floating. And sometimes you don't have anything to do with it, and you just got to pass the turn. And I think that's part of the fun of the deck. But in Kirk Thrasios, you've got a mana outlet in the command zone. So you can always convert all that storm extra mana into card advantage and ramp. So I think it's, you know, it's a little bit more creature oriented. There are some cool survival of the fittest combos that some folks have recently discovered. And it just basically adds that kind of redundancy, that value, that grindy value that Simic brings with it. Kirk Silas is like, oh my God, if you like gambling, man, this is like gambling your last dollar at the casino, you know, like the dollar that you need to get home with, or, you know, the $10 that's going to get you home in the cab. That's like saying, no, like I'm putting it on black and we're spinning the roulette wheel. It basically is Kirk, but wants to go fast as possible. So it involves, you know, like, hey, I want to try to win the game by casting and copying a Demonic Consultation, and if the copy gets put on the stack, I'll name Thassa's Oracle, and then if the next, you know, the original resolves, I have no library, and that's it. So it's like really all in, super risky, super fast, and people have been having a lot of fun with that. Kirk is Shy is like a stacks deck. It really wants to land like a Rule of Law or Deafening Silence or Aether Sworn Canoness, which you wouldn't think would go well with Kirk, right? Because it's like, hey, Kirk wants you to do a lot of stuff, and these cards say no, you can only do one thing per turn. But the idea is that you get Kirk and you get Ashai, and Ashai just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and starts threatening the table with commander damage. And in the meantime, you hold a bunch of counter spells, and when somebody goes for their one card per turn, right, their one spell per turn, you sneak in a counter spell. And luckily, copies and says, you know, you don't have to cast the copies. So his effect gets around cards like Rule of Law or Deafening Silence or Ether Storm Canidus. Yeah, Possibility Storm is really funny. Oh my God. Talk about if you want to cast spells, just land Kark and Possibility Storm because you get to do both. And things get out of hand really quickly.
Oh, that's just insane.
So there are all sorts of builds. You know, I've seen Kark Kodama. I've seen Kark Ikra. Kark Tavash is a really cool build that Scoots has going. It's just like Rakdos Storm. There are all sorts of cool builds. And not all of them are exclusively or only like, hey, more Kark triggers and all instants are sorceries. You know, they leverage Kark at varying degrees and, you know, try to feel like a different flavor.
For sure. So, Scoop, you've been kind of quiet here lately, so I'm going to send the next question at you. What you've been working on Kark decks for quite a while, and I'm just curious to know what one of your latest or your favorite Kark brew is at this very moment.
Oh, that's great. So we were working on Kark and Thrasios for a while. I thought it was, you know, like Ken said, you're going to get all this extra mana. Sometimes you end the turn with 60 red mana because you've copied Jessica's Will three times. You've, you know, whiffed on maybe three of them. And I was like, you know what? Well, how can we turn this red mana into green or this red mana into something we can use? And I was really high on Kark and Thrasios for a while. We threw in the little spice of Defense of the Heart. Which, let me see if I can pull it up, which basically says if an opponent, one of them has three or more creatures in play, it's an enchantment, you sacrifice it and you get two creatures and you put them right into play from your deck. So I was like, oh, what can we do with that? We can get the aforementioned Tavern Scoundrel. Whenever you win a flip, create two treasures. And also Standard All-Star in Mirage Standard, Frenetic Efreet. The Frenetic Efreet says, pay zero, flip a coin, and then it does some other stuff. It doesn't matter what it does. But in the way where you can do Frenetic Efreet, activate it, in response, activate it, etc. So you have this whole stack of flipping coins from this one card, essentially making infinite mana, or I guess half infinite mana because of your odds, and then go to town with Thrasios, drawing your deck, and winning with whatever you've decided to do. So I was working on that for quite a while, but the kind of roadblock was, like Ken said, there's creatures. Like, you want to play creatures. You want to play your Llanowar Elves and all that, but you also want to play your spells, you know, the fun part, you know, copying spells. So that's what I've been working on for a while. I kind of have it in a good spot, but definitely something that I think we're all kind of really... Like, that has the most variants, I guess. We have Cobblepot's version is like a secret Orvar deck, which, you know, you get Orvar out, which says whenever you target one of your creatures, or permanents rather, you can make a copy of that permanent. So introducing that into the Kark environment, I guess you would say, makes it so you can make more than one Gaea's Cradle if you have Thakashima out. I'm pretty sure that works, right?
The legend
doesn't apply. So you can make a whole bunch of Gaea's Cradles. You can make a whole bunch of Orvars. You can make a whole bunch of Kraks and attack with the Kraks because they have haste through either Heat Shimmer, which makes a copy of a creature and it has haste and it's a sorcery. So you can bounce that. Or Twin Flame, same kind of thing. And there's just so many ways to build that Kark Thrasios deck, but I think that one's pretty wide open right now. Yeah. And that's something I kind of want to tackle at some point, but I'm back to the old reliable Kark Sakashima.
It's so hard. Like, I play all three of these decks and I'll jump back and forth depending on what the pod wants, what I'm feeling like. And man, yeah, going back to Kark Sakashima, I'm telling you, it's like water in the desert. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's so consistent. It does the thing. It really is so dense with synergies that it's just like, you know, it's like a fine-tuned machine. You know, people have poured so much time and labor into it. It's like getting into the Lamborghini and taking it on a test drive, you know, after like fiddling with your like car that you've been souping up by yourself. So it's really nice to jump back and forth. But I agree with Scoop. Like, some of these decks there are, it hasn't been cracked yet. Like, Kark-Sakshima has been cracked. You know, it's kind of been solved more or less at the competitive level. You know, we agreed on 93 cards, 20 of us, and that's quite a bit of cards. So there's, you know, only a few cards that are really kind of variants and things that you could swap out if you want to be maximally competitive. But like Kark-Thrasios, Kark-Timna, nobody's cracked them yet. We're trying. We've got ideas. We've got working theories. But, you know, there isn't consensus yet. And that's why I think it's really exciting.
Absolutely.
For sure. For sure. So, we've spent a lot of time talking about the CDH version of Kark. And I kind of wanted to dedicate the second half of the episode to those players who are just asking, okay, so Kark is extremely powerful. But what happens if I want to bring that coin flippy goodness, silliness, jank, whatever you want to call it, into the more casual environment where we're not necessarily trying to maximize our value, but we're just trying to do some silly stuff here? Yes. And I'm going to start off with my own Kark build here. So as Ken did mention a couple minutes ago, and we did talk about this in the pre-show, I did create my own version of Kark with partnering with Prava of the Steel Legion. Prava is a Cat Soldier 1/4. Costing 2 and a white, and reads, as long as it's your turn, creature tokens you control get +1/+4, and for 3 and a white, you can create a 1/1 white soldier creature token. And I felt like, okay, I love playing Boros, I'm just going to be honest here, and I wanted to kind of come up with a different way, a little bit of a different way to play Boros, in that I wanted to be able to sling a lot of spells. So basically the deck, which I've called Boros Party Favors, because you're never quite sure what you're going to get with Kark. Basically looks to try to utilize a whole bunch of very cheap sorceries and instants that create a lot of tokens, hopefully use Kark's ability to be able to copy those tokens, and then utilize a bunch of prowess creatures, very cheap prowess creatures, to try to be able to build up a bit of an army, and then hopefully be able to utilize pieces like Bedlam, or the other version of that in the deck I cannot remember. Basically creatures can't block. So be able to create a huge army, give them haste through something like First Day of Class, which is an absolute bomb if you haven't looked at that before.
Yep.
And, just swing in for the win. And for the record, I have been dumpstered by this deck when I had someone in my playgroup play it a month or two ago. Storm count 8 into Empty the Warrens, and then with 16 or whatever, or maybe it's 32, 2-2 goblins with haste, just, yeah, wrecked the rest of the table. Yeah, that was fun. It was painful, I'm gonna admit, but it was fun just to see how this silly little deck that I could build of a bunch of cards that are, like Ken did mention earlier, 5 to 10 cents a piece, you know, how they really play with each other. Because First Day of Class is 4 cents right now on TCG Player. A lot of the prowess creatures I have are super, super cheap. Just, you know, Prava's 11 cents right now. So just a lot of really good stuff in a nice little budget package that anyone can play. And with things like Carmonic Prodigy in there, you know, just double the triggers. Now, what's really funny about this is I usually lose most of my flips to the point where I've kind of stopped flipping the coin that I've been using because I think it hates me. But that's honestly the fun of the deck, right? To be able to just take Kark's biggest strength, which is the randomness of it, bring it into a more casual environment where I'm not necessarily trying to just storm off really quickly, where I'm just kind of having a nice long game, trying to build a board, you know, do some damage here and there, and then hopefully be able to finally finish my opponents off with a big play, maybe like turn 10, turn 12, something like that. Depends on the game. But yeah, just be able to take this into a slower, more casual environment and still be able to have fun with it. And that's really why I have enjoyed playing this particular Kark deck a lot. I do play a lot of this on, like, anytime I'm on a gameplay channel or something, I do like bringing Kark on there once in a while. Just say, like, hey, you don't necessarily have to crank the optimization up if you don't want to. Kark can do pretty much anything you want Kark to do. You just have to basically wish it and you can turn it into existence.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it turns out instants and sorceries, pretty big pool of cards in the history of Magic the Gathering. So kind of any kind of effect you want is there. And I really like that point about becoming superstitious about your coins and your dice. If you're not superstitious about coins and dice, you're not a Kark player. And as soon as you become a Kark player, you will necessarily become superstitious about coins and dice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The dice hates me today. you know, getting well on the dice, or, you know, I got a couple bad rolls out, it's going to be better next, you know, time, etc.
Yeah, Kark's hands are on my shoulder, Thumbless hands are on my shoulder. There were two footprints in the sand that day, you know, all those memes.
Oh, yeah.
He guided my hand to the promised land.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fun, but except for the few moments where, again, since Red does do a lot of discarding cards, sometimes particular deck, I have found myself basically with no hand and no way to draw cards. So it's, you know, there is a lot of risk to this deck. I'm not going to lie and say, you know, this deck has a lot of ways to get around that. There are very real costs. Red and white do struggle to draw cards as seamlessly as the other colors, so that's kind of half the fun about this particular build. But enough about my particular build. I wanted to ask you guys, just, you know, since I have built this particular casual Kark list, what about Kark really, you know, lends itself to being able to play it at any level of optimization? I mean, how does Kark kind of transcend this topic that we, you know, we as EDH players talk about, where, like, the loudness of the commanders? Going back to my episode with Lenny Woolley a few weeks ago, talking about, you know, we have the very popular commanders because they are very, very good. These are your Korvolds, your Yurikos, your Najeelas, going on down the list. Oh, back in the day, your Golos. Just what about Kark really kind of transcends that boundary and allows it to break both into being like a almost basically a T1 CDH deck, but also just being able to do my silly Boros tokens list? What about Kark just allows you to open up this whole book of amazing endlessness, like playing the sandbox, you know? What about it?
I've got two words. It's Jessica's Will. We have it in your list here, MJ, and what's not fun about copying a Jessica's Will, either with backup, you know, with a couple Kark's out, or even just the YOLO, we call it, what, Naked Kark? Just one Kark.
One Kark trigger, that's it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right in the high up, getting that Jessica's Will copied, and you have it in your deck, we have it in our deck. It's just like, how much fun was that going to be, no matter what side of the coin? Nope, I didn't mean to say that. What side of the coin? You know, like, playing big spells is fun, right? I'm pretty sure we didn't start playing Magic and say, you know what, I'm gonna build a Legacy Storm deck and I just wanna, you know, storm off. No, we're playing Briberies, we're playing Tooth and Nails, we're playing these, you know, big splashy spells. And what's not to love about copying something so powerful, so cheap, that essentially says you wheel yourself. If you cop, let's say you copy Jessica's Will with the Kark out, you're technically drawing six cards, you're making, you know, 10 to 14 mana, and then you get to do more Kark stuff after that. It's just, Jessica's Will is one of the top reasons I would say it's, you know, that transcends both ideologies of competitive and casual.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that kind of the idea of Naked Kark, right? Just, in other words, just Kark, no supplemental or additional triggers, no Kark enhancers necessarily, so no Harmonic Prodigies or Tavern Scoundrels even, none of that, just Naked Kark. That, I think, you know, you could take that in any direction you want to go, as long as you're willing, again, to, you know, have a 50-50 chance of either just going, okay, like, yep, y'all will probably see that again next turn when I try it, or like, oh my god, this copied and now I don't know what to do because this is pretty cool twice. Kark can go there. And I also think too, like, there are some kind of principles that have been established for making sure that a Kark deck is more casual, because people come to the Kark Discord, the Thumbless, that's the name of the group, all the time. They say, like, hey, and particularly about Kark Sakashima, like, hey, can I build this casually? And if so, like, how do I do it? And we all have basically come to the consensus that yes, you can build even Kark Sakashima casually, right? Where you are not, you're trying to put some clothes on Kark. You're not just going for Naked Kark, but there are just a few real simple things to do. And it's not difficult and it doesn't really require much discipline. You make sure that you exclude certain powerful combos, basically cards that are super synergistic. And then the deck can be more hit or miss, more flavorful, more risky, more kind of like, oh my God, I just owned myself in front of my three friends. And, you know, I spent 15 mana on an epic experiment that didn't do anything. It just went back to my hand. I'd like to cry now. But, you know, so there are some effects that we like to recommend that people leave out of their deck. Those are pretty simple. Fast mana, right? So the Mana Crypts of the World, that's obvious. That's a given. Mm-hmm. rituals that pay for themselves, right? So you could cut Jessica's will and say, hey, you know, if it resolves, it pays for itself, so I'm going to leave it out just because I think it could be a little bit too explosive. Or something like a frantic search, right? Or a snap, like, sure. You know, if this copies a few times, suddenly I'm netting a bunch of mana, and then that might feel like it kind of outpaces the table a little too quick. I don't want that. So you just leave those out. Cards with Storm, I think, it depends on the card, right? If you're running the one that makes all the goblin tokens, right? Empty Warrens.
Yeah, absolutely.
All good. All good, absolutely. Right? You're making a bunch of 1/1s and you're just going to pass the turn. You got a bunch of 1/1s. That's like Krenko, right?
Or
that's
give what Krenko does. And... or give them haste. I mean, that's one of the big win cons in my deck, true. As I have seen. It's like you can empty the Warrens and finish the game right there without feeling bad about it. And it's great.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
yeah,
you've done the thing.
Yeah.
You've got to do the thing. You play first day of class. You get your Empty the Warrens tokens and you just, you know, smoke everyone out. That's excellent. That's good feels for everyone. You got to do the thing. You won a game, which is feels good most of the time. And, you know, easy, casual stuff.
Exactly. It's really not too many cards to leave out. And then just free interaction, right? Free disruption. Cards that, like, you could cast over and over again are real, real good with Krark. So leave out, you know, leave out the Submerges of the world, leave out the Fierce Guardianships and the Deflecting Swats and anything that's essentially free. Just leave it out. Make sure that you're actually spending mana on stuff, and that'll make it more fun probably if you really want that higher variance experience, because then it's like, oh my God, wait a minute. So I can like cast this impulse and try to draw some cards right now, or I can like counter the spell, but if I tap out, then I'm not drawing cards, and like, what in the hell am I going to do? That question, that kind of tension, that fun tension, can be really lovely to navigate. So, you know, just make sure that you're not outpacing your opponents in a super quick way, and then you can do whatever you want with the card, really. I mean, it's not that difficult to tune down, so to speak, even Krark's Akashima.
And it's going to happen sometimes. You know, it's a deck that is a 50-50 shot. So sometimes you're going to get all the flips and you're going to be able to do all the things. And you're going to, sometimes you do end up playing all the magic amongst your three other opponents. Yep. And it happens sometimes. And sometimes you just have to understand that that's a play pattern that this has. At some point, you're going to have that variance happen in favor of yourself.
Yep.
And, you know, just enjoy it. Because that's those blowouts sometimes, they're incredible. Incredible, you know, you've got your Gitaxian Probe and you really need to, you know, get it twice in a row. You need to bounce once and you need it to copy. And oh, those blowouts sometimes they're fun, you know, and navigating that line too. Like there's so much, it gets very intricate and that kind of stuff. It happens casual, competitive, either way, you know, don't be afraid to blow someone out if it just happens to go that way.
Exactly. It's like this is, you know, I think that there is kind of a conception maybe that, like the platonic ideal of a commander game is one in which all four players get to do quote unquote the thing, right? We hear that sometimes, but this is that, I'm sorry, that's a platonic ideal, right? And platonic ideals are ideals. They're fantasies. They're what we can strive to create, but we're never going to hit that frequently because this is for better and for worse, right? This is the most complicated version of the most complex game known to the species of human beings, right? This is incredibly complex, incalculably complex. And that means that, just as Scoop said, right, many games are going to be games where it's like, yeah, somebody just took off early because it's a high variance experience. And that's fine. Exactly. You can enjoy just running away with the game and your opponent should be able to enjoy watching you do it. That's a fundamental part of having fun in Commander 2 is not being salty that you didn't get to do the thing every time. That's a very unrealistic expectation. You got to be able to enjoy when you get so thoroughly and explosively owned by your friends and we're like totally helpless because the dice rolled the right way for them. You know what I mean? That's
just an exception.
It happens.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that, enjoying that is great. It's very important.
Right, exactly. And on the other hand, sometimes you just don't have to play, you know, Empty the Warrens. You know, you got Storm 9 and maybe you want to play a couple permanents instead of Empty the Warrens, make the game go longer. As, you know, adults, we can choose to play what we want at any time, you know.
For sure.
Jewel Lotus is fine. Sometimes you don't have to use it.
Yep.
That kind of stuff.
Exactly. I've really taken a ton of inspiration from Scoop in this regard because I'd say probably like in my heart of hearts, I'm pretty spiky. Like I find it really fun to compete to win and like to have that kind of high stakes environment. Absolutely. But I've watched Scoop like playing in a pod and just like, yeah, discard the Jeweled Lotus. You know what I mean? Or like discard the Reiterate that was going to win him the game, mm-hmm. or discard the Sword of Feast and Famine. That's like a bomb, right? At casual tables, just because he was like, not that kind of game. And I think that that, having that discipline to read your table, right? Read the room and say, okay, wait a minute. Like, if I do this, the game's getting in super fast and probably won't feel that great because other people didn't really have much of a chance to affect the game. Or I could just not do it and let's just see what happens. And the game will be probably more memorable because it'll be a little bit, you know, more back and forth. And I think that that's in all of our powers, but it's really hard, or it has been for me, I'll admit, it's been really hard to go like, oh my God, like I can do this explosive, cool thing. And to just go, no, like, it's all right. Like, you don't have to do it right now because that's just not what this game is. And you'll be able to do it in the near future. So don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. The opportunity will present itself again. But I've taken so much inspiration from you, Scoop, about that. So I thank you for that. And I really think that it's a super important point to stress. We're adults. It's an important point to stress.
Yeah, playing a game, you know what? Yeah, exactly. But sometimes, you know what? Other people, if they're not developing too, they don't want to sit around and be like, well, I'm just going to wait. You know, sometimes empty the warrants first day of class in a casual game. Just do it.
Go for it.
You can, like, and that's the same thing. Read the room. Like, if somebody, you know, if your two opponents got a soul ring and a signet, and the fourth one is kind of like hanging out, not doing anything, you know, they're probably not having a fun time watching everyone else play too. So this is not Clark related at all. This is just in general, play to the table, you know.
Yeah, good etiquette.
Sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Also, blow someone out with empty the warrants in first day of class.
Yeah, yeah, do it. Do it. When you can do it, do it. I want to see it. I want to lose that way. So, you know, feel free to do it to me if we're playing.
Yeah, and it's also okay to dumpster me with my own deck because I just enjoyed seeing Clark go off. Because, again, I didn't even think this deck was capable of getting the storm count 8 before that point. I guess I didn't sequence. I was thinking, hey, you know, if I can get like 2-3 copies of Empty the Warrens, 6-8 Goblin Tokens, I can live with that. And then it's like, here, boom, 16, here, 32, go. And it's, my God.
Spicy, double vision in here. Like, all these things. Like, Raise the Alarm. Oh, my God. Standard All-Star back in the day.
Yeah, some good stuff.
I don't
want
to fade myself, but yeah.
Scoop, it's okay. We both started playing in 94. We're old farts, and it's all right. It's okay.
I'm also trying to make it a little bit more casual. And the fact I am running a lot of prowess creatures instead of those big instants and sorceries here too. I mean, I'm running Mizzium Tank in here too, which is basically just an artifact creature with prowess with trample. I mean, it does the thing fairly well, and it just, it's a 17-cent card, but it's just like you can still have fun doing the Clark thing just with a bunch of prowess creatures, which just get a little bit larger and try to beat face with them. So, I mean, it's fun.
Exactly. Yeah, who in the hell does not want to win a game of Magic by making a bunch of goblins and then making a big tank? Like, you know what I mean? If you can't enjoy that, if you can't enjoy watching that, doing that, losing to that, then, you know, think about why you're playing this game. It's a very silly game. It has been since the beginning. And I think that that's something that also doesn't get stressed. We can be real serious about it, right? We can be like, oh my God, Commander Magic, like, it's about self-expression. It's about my identity. Yes, that's true. But Commander from the beginning and Magic from the beginning has been about being silly, doing stupid stuff that makes you laugh, that surprises you. So just take a moment, breathe it in. If you lose in a way, you know, that's like really explosive, just go, yeah, like, you know, my homie made 40 goblins, and then because he made a lot of goblins, a tank was real big and did a smash on me, and now I'm dead. Enjoy that. That's funny, you know?
definitely. Okay, so the last thing I'm gonna do is challenge you guys a little bit here, and again, I want you to put on your more casual brewing hats here for a moment, and just bear with me on this one. So when you go through Clark's page on EDH Rec, of course, you get a lot of the decks that we've already talked about on here. Obviously, 1600 Sakashima decks, and kind of going on from there, Vile Smasher, Thrasios, Kaidel, Silas, you know, going on down the list. But I guess I'm curious, if you guys were to build a Clark partner pairing for a more casual environment, you know, somewhat similar to my Boros deck here, what would be kind of a spicy commander that you would pair with, and what would that deck do? And I'll just kind of leave that with you, Ken, and I'll start with you.
Yeah, oh, I mean, this is fun because I've thought about this, right? I have brewed casual Karklis, and I'm a casual brewer. Like, I take a lot of pride in my casual decks that I've worked on, even though, you know, maybe I have more of a reputation for being a spike. Like, I really love my casual list, too. I think you could do a couple different things. Nathan Jones, the Hermit Druid, mm-hmm. he was working on a Kirk Sakashima kind of Voltron list with pump spells. And I thought that was really fun. I think you could do that really beautifully with Kedis, right?
Just run
Kedis, Kirk, and try to make Kirk do real big punch and try to nuke the table that way. I think Kirk Keidel is a lot of fun, just like generating absurd amounts of mana. Maybe you don't throw in a ton of outlets, you know what I mean? You just like see how big you can make the number. Mm-hmm. I've seen folks do cool stuff with Kirk and, oh God, what? Kirk and Arden. And like, have a kind of equipment-y, aura-y theme that just mm-hmm. has instants and sorceries to bolster the value. I'm just looking through all the partners now, too, as I talk. I think Kark Rograk would be pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
When the hell you do that?
You're taking my... Oh, man, I had... That was mine. I was like, you're just going through the CDA track. I got... As soon as you said that, I'm like, I know exactly what I would pick.
Here's the one that I've been dreaming of, and I haven't done it yet, but I think this will speak to you too, because it's tokens related. I want to see Kirk Sadar Kondo.
I just want to see
a ton of tokens, and I want to see like some I don't know, I think you could throw some fun mildish like staxy pieces that can get removed easily in there, like Gaddock Teague, you know what I mean? Like, I want to see just a bunch of 1/1s and potentially a bunch of 1/1s on horses, like give them banding or something, mm-hmm. or give them all flanking. I want to see that do a thing. Like, that's been haunting me since day one. It's like, what does Kirk Sadar Kondo look like?
I mentioned that last week. I was pretty excited about it because you get all the hate bears.
Yeah.
You get all the red cards that make Kirk go.
Yep, go burr.
Probably some equipment kind of stuff, too, because you can play... The flail, Conqueror's Flail.
Yeah, I can play. Yep, exactly.
And then Armageddon.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Kirk Tormod is also pretty cool. I saw somebody just like also going a token route of trying to really like put a ton of cards in the bin and then get rid of them in sneaky ways, like with Planar Void, and then just like make a bunch of zombies. So I don't know. I think Kirk's at Arcondo. That would be my casual like crack it. Just make a casual token deck with some good green white like token support, a little red impulsive draws and token support, and just see what happens. See how many unblockable 1/1s it could take to nuke a table at
sure.
a collective 120 life.
And you get to live the dream of copying Kadama's Reach and cultivate.
Oh my God, that's so true. Exactly. Oh, and one more that comes to mind, and I'm sorry, Scoop, if I'm stealing all of yours, but I know that I'm not. No. I know that you got ideas. Kirk Elegith, the big Sphinx that says, if you would scry a number of cards, draw any instead. I would make that just to be like, can I draw myself out? You know what I mean? Because I think that really that could be a fun like sub game. It's just like, just play all the little cantrips that make you scry. Like, there's a card that says scry 1, scry 2, scry 3, scry 4, or whatever. I would just want to be like, can I draw myself out? Not even to win. Don't throw a lab man in. Don't throw any of that in. Just be like, I want to end the game with 89 cards in my hand, you know? And if I've done that, I've won. And then I also have, like, a big Sphinx or whatever if I need to attack people. But, yeah, so that's what I would work on.
All right, Scoop, what do you got?
So one of my favorite things to do is polymorph effects, right? So Quark and Roger, right? Mono red. Roger's 0 mana. Quark is 2. And you have Reality Scramble. You have Transmogrify, I believe is the red one.
Yep.
And then if you get it copied, you can target both of your gentlemen. And then you can get crazy cards like 2 Eldrazi or Magmatic Force and not Gisella, I wish. Is there a red card that does double damage? It's like in some crazy ass.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, set. I own it, and it was stupid expensive. It's it's like Devil Bros.
Yeah, the Devil Bros. Oh yeah. My goodness, yeah, that's from Game Night something.
Game Night. Yeah.
It's from the party box, and then you can play. You know. Yeah, that's it. I just want to transmute, and those would be the only two creatures in the deck because I want to get 100% success rate. And Magmatic Force is every upkeep you deal 3 damage to something.
And oh, that's funny. Huge. I like that.
It's one of my favorite cards. It's one of my favorite cards because it's so backbreaking. But that's what I would do because Roger's so cheap, and then you can play cards like Tome of Legends, which is anytime one of your commanders comes into play or attacks, it gets a counter, and then you remove a counter to draw a card. And oh, even Blightsteel. Oh yeah, Blightsteel and Force.
That's a scoop. That's a scoop special right there.
Yeah, Alan's. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I love my some Blightsteel.
I'm afraid.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, and now it gets double strike with Furious something. I forget. Whatever pump spells Red has, they're just so terrifying, and then they're copied on a Blightsteel. Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I love things that. Like Teamer Battle Rage, go burr.
Yeah,
Teamer
exactly.
Battle Rage. Yep. And Reality Scramble is good because it has the discard a land, you can cast it from your graveyard again. So you can play rummage effects to get that in there.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's the only one I would pick. And Siddhar Kondo. Because
we just haven't cracked it. I'm dedicated, man. I want to see
Naya.
It.
Yeah, Naya.
Yeah, Naya Clark.
Naya Clark. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. Honestly, I'm glad that we had this discussion because I honestly didn't even think about a lot of these outlets before now. And now I kind of want to build a Siddhar Kondo version of this.
Yeah, do it. If you do it, let us know. We'll hype you up, and we'll also, you know, like. We'll brew with you, and that I'll just throw a quick shout out for the Thumbless Discord. It's casual and competitive, right? It's just the Krark, the unified Krark Discord is what I call it, but that's what it is. So if you want to brew casually, competitively, doesn't matter, as long as you are willing to pretend to be Thumbless or be Thumbless, and as long as you love to live and die by the coin, come on down, join us. The water's quite warm. It's a good bunch of people. We've got good moderators. Everybody's nice, everybody's kind. Keeping it posy vibes only, so you know it's a good place.
Absolutely, I agree with that 100%.
All right, so I want to thank you guys for taking the time to talk Krark with me today. This has been really enlightening for me, and I've gotten to now have a new challenge brew, I suppose. So I want to thank you two for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh man. So again, I'm gonna ask you guys where your content could be, and then Scoop again some of the stuff that you're working on. Just in general, whether it's Krark related or just CDH in general. So I'm going to start with you, Scoop. Just, you know, any final words for this episode? Any word wisdom for budding Krark players out there?
Yeah, don't be afraid to win and also be okay to lose. You know, Krark, like I said, it's got blowout potential. It's got no out. What's the opposite of blowout? No out?
Yeah, no out.
It's got no out potential. And, you know, just enjoy it. You know, you can pair it with anything you like. You can play the biggest spells you want. You know, the most efficient cantrips you want, Ponder, Preordain, etc. Definitely give it a shot. You know, it gets a bad rap sometimes, but find out why it's getting a bad rap when you have fun with it and blow people out. That's no big deal.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm on the Twitters. You can find me making memes, basically. That's all I'm here for. I don't have any affiliates or anything like that. I'm just hanging out, having a good time. Currently on Urza. Mono Blue Urza, which does the transmute thing, which I'm turning Urza's Karn token or construct into a Hullbreaker Horror.
Yep.
But that's
terrifying.
What I'm working on now. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, and fun. A Scoop, obviously, since you've been in the community a long time, are there any some of the, you know, big streamer or YouTuber names out there that you've had the opportunity to play with, where if people are interested in seeing some of your brews, where they can go find you out on the YouTubes?
Oh yeah, Twitch. For sure. So so Twitch, I usually get invited to Alan's streams, Mental Misplay. Alan and Cyrus, great proponents of the format, CEDH, Chillax, Mundar, all that. I've been on Neo Royale's channel a bit, YouTube. Definitely one of the more casual Great editing also. Oh goodness. These games you could just have a day. You're home from school, home from work, go on Neo Royals channel, just watch them all. And then Ken stuff, the Quark Disc or the Quark Summit, and the Quark Off, which the last year's Quark Off. And this year we had one for a charity stream in the middle of the year, yeah.
We did. And I've got all that footage today. Man, I feel like the first Quark Off, it's got the status of like hit of like, you know, missing like mysterious footage, because like it is a nightmare to edit. I literally have had three editors start to work on it and they're like, I can't do this, it's killing me. And I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. It's just there's so many triggered abilities. But I'm telling you, one day the original, the OG Krarkoff, the Krarks, you know, the big cherry
game
man,
out
it's
of
gonna
those
come out. It's
was
gonna,
rough.
oh my God, it was a nightmare. It was fun though, but it was a stupid nightmare of stack wars. Somebody tried to resolve a gut shot, right? Pay two life,
Oh
deal one damage. We spent 30 minutes trying to resolve a gut shot. So
no.
that tells you what we
Just
got
kept
up
going
to.
up and down and back up and down on top of each other,
Oh,
like
and
that's.
counterspells. People are just like, you know, I don't want that last damage on my Krark, so you know, we're gonna get in a counterspell war. And it's like, okay, so it's like three Krark pilots all throwing their deflecting swats at each other and being like, okay, wait a minute, where are we on the stack? Like, what? Wait, where? Like, did we resolve that? And it was just a nightmare. So
Oh
yeah,
no.
the Krark off is good, but I'll second the Neo Royal thing. That's like, it's a great channel. It's a really great channel. Super high production quality. Lovely
Oh, that's great.
players.
Yeah,
Fun
Kelly
decks.
and
Like,
Neo, for sure.
yeah, they're lovely people. So you know, go watch their stuff big time.
Yep.
And
And
Alan, mental misplay.
oh my God, amazing. He's like a brother. So yes, definitely hit him up.
Oh yeah, I was on Alan's stream last week, had a lot of fun. My deck didn't quite go off, but you know, that's not the point. We're just having fun there. And I can also third the shout out for the Neo Royal House Pricey Cardboard. I have been a fairly regular guest over the last few months on there, playing a whole bunch of really weird, spicy brews, you know, whatever weird, unique things that have you listening to my episodes in the first place, probably. So just fun things like that. So definitely check that out. Phil's a great guy. Yeah, Phil and Kelly are awesome. They do a lot of really cool game stuff. And yeah, the editing is top notch out there. He never, or they never get enough love, honestly. So yeah, definitely check them out on the YouTubes. But yeah, and Ken, again, thank you for being here, man. It's been awesome having you.
Oh, it's my total and utter pleasure. As we were talking about in the pre-recording chat, like Scoop and I can just talk for hours about anything. So it's always a pleasure to blab with you, Scoop. But yeah, so my name's Ken and I run Stacked EDH. We're a channel on YouTube. We make videos about Commander, casual and competitive, all kinds of videos. Probably most well known for our video essays, in which I blab a lot in a hopefully articulate and helpful way about the format, the format's history, the format's tensions, and trying to think productively about how we can make the format more inclusive and more positive and joyful. But we've also got deck techs, you know. So if you're interested in Krark in particular, take a look at the Krark Box deck tech. It's at the tippy top end of the format, right? So it's for, you know, three competitive Krark lists. But again, just watch it for inspiration. You can always pull stuff out that you know is a little bit too effective and make it a little bit jankier, throw in some more pet cards and have fun with it. And then I'm on Twitter and Instagram, but I talk a lot on Twitter, so feel free to hit me up. I love having conversations, particularly like private conversations with folks and just getting to know them, looking at their decks, etc. Send me a DM, we can get into it. And if you wind up wanting to live and die by the coin, come on down to the Thumbless Discord.
Come on in.
It's a real nice corral of a bunch of weirdos. And
the water's fine.
It's a real welcoming place.
Yeah, and where can people find the Discord if they're interested in joining?
Absolutely. So if you go to Siskel and Ebert, if you look that up on Moxfield, or even just Google Siskel and Ebert Moxfield, you can click that deck list. And at the top, it says View Primer. The primer is like the big, long... It's not that long, but you know, it's pretty long. It's a text document explaining the deck, like how the deck works and what our thoughts are behind it and card choices. At the very top of that deck list's primer, there's a link. It says Thumbless Discord, linked right at the top. That link is good to go forever. It hopefully is a fun little rabbit hunt too. I like to put a lot of little Easter eggs in all the stuff that I make. And so there are a couple little secrets in that primer too. Maybe you'll be the first person to discover one of them and let us all know.
Oh, that's really cool. I that's awesome. Wow. Okay. And if you're interested in hearing any of the other episodes that I've done on this MTG in Quarantine podcast, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. That is your Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, MTG Cast, Castbox, Podbean, and a whole bunch of other ones. So if it's a major podcast outlet, you can probably find my stuff on there. You can also find me on the Twitters at MTG in Quarantine. If you find the happy-looking Ulamog wearing a pair of headphones, you found the right place. And I'd like to utilize this opportunity again to give a huge shout out and thank you to the awesome people who've supported me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. So a huge shout out and thank you to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.